Jinkies, it's time to get in the Halloween spirit as we want to rock and roll and podcast all night long as we talk about the time that Scooby-Doo met Kiss. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason the Catman Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to the Mind University because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or rock band from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour, except this week where we're doing something, listeners, that we've never done before.
Yes, this is a quite unique episode of Geek History Lesson. We were recording an episode about Howl's Moving Castle, the very especially amazing Studio Ghibli film. And during that podcast recording, Ashley happened to make a certain joke. Ashley, what was that joke?
Well, there is a voice actress in the English language dub who plays the older Sophie, whose name is Jean Simmons. And I said, not like the guy from Kiss, to which Jason responded, you know, they met Scooby-Doo once.
And then we went down this rabbit hole where we talked about, what if on Geek History Lesson, we talked about the movie where they met, Scooby-Doo and Kiss Rock and Roll Mystery. We asked a bunch of you on Twitter to tweet the hashtag Kiss Army Yes. And we said that, I can't remember the number, we said if a giant number of you tweeted a response in the positive, that we would do this episode. And I think they responded in spades. Ashley, do you want to read the names of everybody that requested this episode really quickly before we get to our special guest who's being super, super quiet right now?
Okay, so this episode's TAs are Jerry Tolbert at SidX1210, Trey McKnight at In_Meyer, Lorik Robert Harding, Sean Ferreira, Mike Murdoch, Rochelle Norland at PsychoRed, at Coach_Pib, at West Sound Guy, Arclay Johnson, at Wondering Rogue, Kaiser Brown, Jack Roca, Ryan Cigar Photo, at Only Egg Chef, at Aldelardo, at Denny_Lawler, Ryan Rudling, at Spider_Hawk, at GSoto83, Joseph Campbell, Mark Smith, Jeffrey Basil, Bianca Alicia, Dave Lees, at Carrasco Patro, at Jim_Bar, Charles Elder, at Roman Salaz 88, at Paul Douglas, Austin Nisbet, Tony Maldonado, at Misha Nitz, Mark A. Smith, Andy Babcock, Gabrielle Henley, Ryan Reigns, at AnimeNES, at OZ 9376721, Brian Ganniger, Ricardo Rodriguez, Tara Samick, Alex Brito, Sally Eubanks, Alex Yoki, and Hal Smith.
Woo! That's a lot of people.
That's the most people who've ever recommended or requested anything.
Yes, but we're going to call them an army because they are here. They activated as the Kiss Army. And because they activated, we brought in a special, special guest. Thanks to a friend and previous guest of the podcast, comic book writer Sterling Gates, who we told about the idea of doing this episode. And he was like, you know what? I know the guy who wrote Scooby-Doo and Kiss Rock and Roll Mystery, to which we immediately replied, please text him right now.
Yes.
So, our very special guest is the writer of this movie. He is a writer of television, animation, comic books. He was once on Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego, which he hosted, Robot Chicken, and, of course, the thing we're talking about, Kiss Meets Scooby-Doo. I apologize right now if I mispronounce his last name. If I was a professional, I would have asked him before we started recording, but I'm not. Kevin Shinnick, welcome to the podcast.
Nailed it, Jesson.
Yes!
You did. You really nailed it. And, you know, I would have been one of those people who tweeted in had I known you were asking that question, because I love watching this movie.
You know, I'm gonna fully admit this. I have been mixed on Scooby-Doo things in the last 10 years, but I freaking loved this movie. I have no lie. I thought it was a lot of fun, and it was such a blast. So this is my, I guess for the whole podcast, this is my applause for you.
Thank you. That I will take that.
As someone who grew up in the 90s, it's super cool to be talking to the face of Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego.
Oh my God. I know.
I saw that and I was very excited because I love that show.
I'm so glad. You know, it's incredible. And this happened to me, which was weird, 2 days in a row. I went in to pitch something, or I had a meeting, I think, at Nickelodeon, and I went in, and the person bringing me in said, I have to admit to you, not only was I a fan, but I was a guest on your show, Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego?
Oh, my God!
But the crazy thing is, literally the next day I was at Disney, and the same exact thing happened. So for whatever reason, our contestants all wound up moving to the West Coast and becoming executives or young executives.
Was that the prize of the show?
Yeah, you got a career in Hollywood.
We were way ahead of ourselves. Yes, yes, it was a very good prize.
All right. Well, we're going to talk a lot about Kevin's career in our Patreon-exclusive episode, Geek History Lesson Extra. So if you want more Carmen Sandiego stories and all that jazz, stick around. Go over to our Patreon for that. But we're here to talk about KISS. We're here to talk about Scooby-Doo, and we're here to talk about The Rock, or the Detroit Rock. Everybody out there, we need to give you a quick 10-cent origin of Scooby-Doo and KISS rock and roll mystery. Ashley, do you want to take us through that, just in case somebody's listening to this podcast and they're like, I don't know what this movie is?
You should pause it and go watch it. It's very accessible. It's on Amazon Prime at the time of this recording. That's where we watched it. It's great. Scooby-Doo and KISS a rock and roll mystery is a 2015 animated comedy mystery film. All of those descriptors are accurate. I'm trying to read this really quickly because I didn't look at it before. It is the 25th of the direct-to-video animated Scooby-Doo films, which I didn't know there were that many. That's incredibly incredible. It was written by the amazing Kevin Shinnick with a story by Kevin and Jim Creek, who we are a big fan of here on the podcast.
Yes, he's also a friend of the pod.
Yes. And it was released digitally on July 10th, 2015. And it was the last Scooby-Doo production featuring Mindy Cohen as Velma Dinkley since Kate Micucci, pretty sure I nailed that, would take over the role the same year. And she has been Velma going forward as a big Velma stan. I dressed up as her once for Halloween. That's a very important detail to me.
All right, Kevin. So we have a section on our podcast called The Meet Cute. This is where Ashley and I reveal where we first encountered the subject that we're talking about, basically our romantic comedy term. But we want to ask you.
Yes.
What's your meet cute for KISS? When did you first encounter this band? Why do you love them so much? Let's hear this story.
Oh, my God. I mean, the weird thing, I've known them since practically their incarnation, and I grew up loving them. They were superheroes to me, and I'm just trying to tell in what order to go about this. But basically, I had just been finishing up the series Mad that I created for Warner Brothers, and I was thinking of leaving because the series was ending, and I thought, all right, you know, maybe I'll New Horizons and whatnot. And they were very grateful and they were very good to me. And they were like, oh, stay, do some other stuff. And I was like, I don't know. And they said,
sorry,
my Siri is listening in on me.
She always?
Yeah, my God, I know that. So then they said, we'll do the new like Tom and Jerry. No, I'm not going to do the new this. No. And they said, do the new Scooby-Doo movie. And I said, I really don't want to. And they said, but it's Scooby-Doo meets KISS and they're involved. And I thought to myself, that would be a childhood dream come true. And I went home to my wife and I said, am I being an idiot to stay for this? And she was like, no, you need to do this. And I said yes to these guys without just because I was so thrilled. And I'm getting ahead of myself, but you probably know of it. But when they were at their peak in the late 70s, there was a movie called KISS and Phantom of the Amusement Park.
I do know that movie.
And it's dreadful. It's dreadful. I stuttered because I've said this to Paul Stanley. He thinks it's dreadful. And I said, it's a 2-hour movie. If you were to take out all the air and bad scenes, I still think it would make a really good 22-minute episode of something.
That's how I feel about Star Trek, the motion picture.
You know, that's an excellent point. I think they spent 9 to 12 minutes just on the Enterprise when they first showed it. It's like, all right, we get it. We've seen this. But anyway, when they came to me and asked me if I want to do that, I was like, absolutely. And in my weird way, I was kind of like, maybe this is my chance to right the wrong that, 10-year-old Kevin felt when he saw Kiss in the Phantom of the Amusement Park. Because the two worlds, on one level, people are like, that's crazy, Scooby-Doo and Kiss? And I saw it as clear as day. I was like, this is a natural fit. You know, they both have amusement parks. They both have superhero elements to them. They both have supernatural elements to them. So I said, bring it on. And that's pretty much how that came about.
So from breaking the story with Jim Krieg to turning in your final screenplay, how long did that take?
Not long at all. Maybe 3 months.
Wow, that's a quick turnaround.
Yeah. Well, I was just on fire with this because I was so excited. And it pretty much stayed close to like the first draft. I think the third act, some could say it goes off the rails, but the third act differs a little bit from our first draft. But essentially, it was just I had this vision for it. You know, Jim and I had come up with the idea that, you know, they are superheroes and whatnot, and so we should go from there. And then he went off and worked on something else, and then I took it from there, and just like I said, tried to bring to life all that we love about Scooby-Doo and all that we love about Kiss and bring them together. And in hindsight, I got to say one of the greatest compliments I got about this movie was from Gene Simmons, which was surprising to me. But he took me aside and said, you really did it. He said, you gave equal opportunity to both franchises. He said, one franchise could have easily swallowed the other. And he said, and you really rode the line and succeeded in that. So I took that as a huge compliment because, you know, he's Gene Simmons.
That's interesting because he has an interview with Fox 411 where he says, yeah, it's definitely more of a Kiss movie, but we try our best to share it. I think I might have put the quote actually in the show notes, but I thought that's very sweet. He paid you that compliment.
I was taken aback by it too, but he was great. He really was.
Before we get to talking like some of the details of this movie and going into full spoilers, I have to ask you one final question.
Yeah.
Because I assume you got to go to some of the recording sessions for this.
Oh, all of them. And I'll tell you a funny story if you don't mind me jumping
in. Yeah, go for it.
You know, obviously they paid me very well for this movie, but I did it solely on the off chance that I might get a picture of me with the band in makeup. I don't know why I thought that, but I thought, you know, I was delusional and I thought, put it this way, if I don't do it, I'm not going to get that chance. So if I do it, there's an off chance I might get it. So, of course, at the records, they all come in and I get my chance, but it's without the makeup. And I thought, hey, that I am, you know, I am so happy to be getting this. And then, like, maybe 3 months later, 4 months later, they invited us to go to one of their concerts. And so they invited us backstage and I have a photo of me with the band in makeup. And I'll have to send it to you because the expression on my face is that of a 10-year-old who was like, I did it, which is the whole reason I did this. And then I finally got it.
Please do. And then I will bully you to be like, can we share this with all of our listeners?
Yes, I will send you something.
Yes.
I wonder if you got brought into that initial meeting, if they were like, okay, we can either give you a paycheck or a picture with Kiss, but you only get one.
I tried to play it cool. I failed, but I tried to play it cool, at least to the last minute anyway.
All right, everybody, listeners, we're going to be talking about this movie now in full spoilers. Yes. Definitely go watch it now. Here's your spoiler warning. You might have answered the question already when you brought up the idea of the previous Kiss movie, Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. When this movie opened up in the fictional world of Kiss World, one, I said, I'd go to that park. But I'm going to assume that the Six Flags, that is the, you know, the park of the Phantom of the Park, that's the inspiration for Kiss World?
Are you talking about our movie or because you're right, Six Flags here in Santa Clarita was where they shot Kiss in the Phantom of the Amusement Park. I just took it and thought, you know, it's not such a far leap to think that one other thing Gene and the rest of them would do was open an amusement park. So it is a fictional park, but yeah, I based it on something. If they had the money, I'm sure they would do it.
That's what I assumed, yeah.
Jason actually said, because I wrote it down, and I quote, "Kiss World, I love it," in the first probably 2 minutes of the movie.
Awesome. And I keep thinking they should do that, because I would totally go to Kiss World. Jason and I can go to Kiss World together.
We're going to set a date.
Well, you also gave them a number of things that they could sell in the park. So.
That's right.
Yeah, it's true. Well, the funny thing is, you know, again, I'm writing this not in a vacuum, but I had not, you know, we knew them and all that stuff, but I hadn't really sat with them. And I kept thinking, what am I going to be able to get away with? You know, and so there's some things that didn't make it in, which were more maybe inside jokes to like the original band members, things like that. But I kept putting in these actual products, because I thought maybe I have a better case if they're actual products. And when I thought, oh, they're gonna be annoyed I did that. And they loved it, that they asked me to put even twice as many in there. So then after a while, I started getting a little crazy with them. But at first, I was just using all the ones they actually had, like a Kiss coffin.
They actually had a Kiss coffin?
Yeah, they sell it now. They have a Kiss coffin, and I think they actually have a Kiss toilet.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought those were all jokes.
If I can find these, I'm going to share them on the socials.
You should. A lot of what was there is in actuality.
Are Kiss smelling salts real?
I don't know.
There's another interesting cameo in the very beginning of this movie where we meet the carnival workers as played by Kevin Smith and Jay Mews.
Yes.
Now, you might not know the answer to this, but I have to ask, how did Silent Bob and Jay get involved with this Kiss movie?
You know what? I know exactly how that happened was, and I know it because I was supposed to be Kevin Smith's role. And I gave myself a little part in it. And then we were trying to go out to other people, and we'd already gotten most of our cast. And then I think they just reached out. Like we thought it might be something they were interested in, or at least Kevin Smith might be interested in. Mm-hmm. So we reached out to them. And when they both said yes, I was looking around, what can I give them? And then I thought, well, I have to give up my role in order to have these two people in the movie. So yeah, basically we reached out to them and they said yes, they'd love to do it. But I did have a take one for the team and lose my role.
Aw. Well, hopefully there'll be another role for you in a Kiss animated feature in the future.
Exactly.
And it's interesting because they're obviously huge names in the geek community, but they're kind of like the least of the star power that you have in the cast.
It is so crazy. and it kind of snowballed because we got, you know, you have Kiss, first of all. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, you know, Gene knew someone. And then it was like, I think we had just worked with Gary Marshall on like Looney Tunes. So we asked him and then he said yes. And then he was like, have you thought about getting my sister? You know, and we were like, do you think Penny Marshall would like to do this? And he was like, yeah. So we got her. So it was pretty incredible cast.
Yeah, see, that's the insane thing about this movie, is that this movie is already insane with the idea that Scooby-Doo meets Kiss. But then the fact that the creator of Happy Days, Gary Marshall, agreed to do a voice in, and the late, great Penny Marshall. Like, that was, when the movie started and I heard the park manager, I kept saying to Ashley, I was like, I know that voice. Who is that voice? And then to find out it was Gary Marshall, I was like, what is he doing in a Kiss movie?
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my God.
You know what's so funny? And I found this, you know, I've done, my whole career is a lot of IP. Star Wars, Spider-Man, Mad, all these things. You know, in some way, shape, or form, you're always ruining someone's childhood. You know what I mean? and yet, with Scooby-Doo and Kiss, it was like right on the money. Everybody was very happy with this movie for whatever reason. I don't know if the bar was low. I don't know if they all wanted to fix Kiss in the Phantom Amusement Park, but it hit right in the bullseye. So I was very happy about that.
I mean, the animation looks incredible. It's stunning. Sometimes you do get animated movies and you can tell that it's on a more of a shoestring budget. That's not the case here.
No.
Do you know anything about how the Scooby Gang's makeup was decided? Was that something that you put in the script? Because when we first meet them, they're sporting the signature Kiss looks.
You mean who is who?
Yeah.
I just, you know, it made sense to me that Daphne would be in love with a star child.
Love
and
that.
So that she'd be wearing his, you know, and it just, like I said to you, which is so funny, a lot of this just made sense to me. People are like, this is so crazy. And I was like, really? This is exactly how I imagined this movie might be, even if I didn't write it.
So
you
this
know what
is
I mean?
Like what living in your brain is like?
This is exactly what living in my brain is like. I took a lot of cough syrup and then I tried to write it.
I think Kiss would frown upon you for going so basic with cough syrup.
another thing that I have to shout out about this movie is I absolutely love the opening title credits, which actually come quite a bit. They're kind of late into the movie. I think they're like almost 10, almost 15 minutes into the movie. But the style of the sequence, and please forgive me, Kiss Army, it reminded me of Beatles Rock Band. But I mean that in a good way.
In the best way.
In the best way. I love the stylistic choices of it. But the other thing was, when we started this movie, there was a brief worry where I kind of thought that maybe Kiss wouldn't let this movie use their songs.
Yeah,
And the fact that I got to hear I Want to Rock and Roll All Night Long over the opening credits like gave me like a breath of relief where I was like, oh, whew, we will hear some Kiss songs during this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, and it gives me, because I'm such a fan, it gave me chills when those opening credits went. And like, you know, the director is Tony Cervone and he and I are both huge fans. So this was just a labor of love on every level. And the animators were just amazing, as you said, and you called out. The animation is fantastic. And later on, we specifically went for a Jack Kirby influence.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that, definitely. I was like, this is definitely Jack Kirby.
Absolutely. What's funny is, you pointed out too, I originally had positioned the credits to be... I want it to happen when the Scooby-Doo and the gang are, we meet them in the mystery machine. And as they pull up, they were talking about the Ascot Five and stuff like that. And I wanted it to be where, Freddie was kind of like not into them. And he's like, he quoted something as they pull up, he kind of slows his speech. And we see like the giant statues of Kiss outside of Kiss World. And I thought then is when we would go into the credits, and then because we get another reveal of the band members later on, mm-hmm. but then it was later decided that the credits just felt better there where they are now. So you are right. I kind of wrote this that the credits would come a little bit earlier, but it was just the powers that be said, no, let's go a little bit later. But again, the credit sequence, I think, is just amazing.
I also love how it feels like with every act break, you're dipping into a new style. I know we tease the Kirby stuff that comes at the end, but there are full-on anime magical girl transformations that happen, which as a Sailor Moon fan, I was absolutely delighted by. And I was like, more of these, please. This
That's
is so great.
Great. Yeah. And Jason, get to back to your other question or your comment, which was, I had the same thing. I said, oh, what are we going to be able to use song-wise? Because, you know, are we going to be able to? And at first it was like, look, just write what you think would fit here, and then we'll go to them and ask them if we can use it. And I thought, well, all right, that's taking a lot of chance. But they were so gracious and so generous that they said, whatever you want, you can have. And the funny thing is, I would use more, but, you know, it is also an animated family special. So these are the songs that we love, but also the ones who have lyrics that we can actually share. You know what I mean?
Oh, I didn't think about that.
That's a fair point. But I will say that the songs used in this movie are, I thought, like, and especially at the points they're used, were the perfect choices. I really, like, if those were the only Kiss songs we're going to hear, like, I thought you picked the right ones.
Well, good. Thank you. And like I said, I would sit there and just listen. I kept calling it research, but I would, you know, I read all the biographies, I listened to the music over and over again. And as I was listening to the music, I kept thinking, oh, this would be great for this, or this would be perfect for a chase scene or whatnot. And that's why it was easy to work them in, because I was very familiar with them, even from just my childhood.
Now, I want to ask you, so in this next part of the movie, there's a lot of just fast and furious different Kiss type things. Like, there's the reveal of all the different Kiss design rides. We get the Kiss design costume change where, like, that. Yeah, that's where they go into the very Sailor Moon thing. There's a lot of just like Kiss this, Kiss that, you know, the demons thing, the Star Child's thing. How much input did the actual members of Kiss have towards any of that? Or was that all you?
Well, you know, I mean, look, obviously a whole team of people made this movie and it couldn't have done without any of them missing. But this, what you see on the screen is basically what I wrote in the script. And it's again, my hat's off to the band because I was writing this not knowing, are they going to go for any of this? You know, and the first, and we're just waiting for those notes of like, oh, you know, do they like this? Do that like this? You know, I had no idea. So when they came back and they were like, yeah, we love it. And again, I know I'm jumping around and maybe some spoilers, but the other thing when I wrote that there's the Ascot Five, mm-hmm. I didn't think for a second that they would actually record that.
Don't touch my Ascot, an instant classic.
Exactly, exactly. And I thought, well, we'll write this, but you know, we'll probably get somebody else to sing it, whatever. So when they said, like, no, we'd love to record this, and Eric Singer got to do vocals and stuff, it was really great. So getting back to your original question, anything you see there is what was in the script. Like you pointed out before, Ashley, designating what Scooby-Doo characters had the makeup on, that was just a decision I made, and then later on with the costumes and how they change and when they change. And again, you know, I'm a fan, Tony, the director, was a fan, so it was an easy, these were easy meetings. He and I would just sit and chat, and you know, it was barely work because we loved it so much. Later on, you know, towards the end for timing and things like that, there were notes and things that had to be changed and decisions that were made. But for the most part, script to screen, pretty much as you see it.
It's really, really sweet to hear that everyone was a really good sport about this. But I do want to ask, if you had such a great time with KISS, did you have any notes or any pushback with WB being in charge of the Scooby-Doo gang? Because I, like I said, I'm a big Velma fan, and I enjoyed that she cannot deal with anything that is happening, and she like logics her way through it all. Was all the Scooby gang stuff more or less untouched from the original script as well?
Good question. No, you know why? Because I'm thinking back, there was when I say first draft, I am now remembering that there was a whole different, complete different script that I wrote, or at least an outline, not a mm-hmm. script, that was more, and that's where I realized, oh, wait, I think I am making this more of a KISS movie than a Scooby-Doo movie. And it was more Wizard of Oz-ish with mm-hmm. the Scooby-Doo gang meeting them and then having to go on this journey and whatnot. And so then I pulled back and thought, oh, wait, I do have to keep with the tropes of these characters. And that's where there were a lot of discussions from WB and all of us sitting around saying like, no, look, Velma does this and Daphne does this. And, you know, this is the way this has to be. And she would never buy this. And so, yes, there was a lot of, and when I say it was easygoing, what I mean is, and I had this experience with Mad too, when I'm very fortunate to have had it, which is everybody on my team loved Mad. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. everybody was just so happy to be doing this. It was a similar case with this, where everybody involved were such fans mm-hmm. that when we got notes, we were like, all right, let's make this the best we can make it. But it was a great and joyful journey.
Well, and you can't make a movie without notes.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right. There probably were more notes on the Scooby-Doo side than there were on the KISS side.
All right, so I want to know if this was a meeting that happened.
Uh-oh.
We lead towards, we activate a Ferris wheel, we meet the Elder, we have a giant fight, and then KISS have this giant rocket ship that is a guitar, and we leave, I think, the WB animation world, we leave the KISS world, and we rock into
heavy metal world.
Heavy metal, Jack yeah. Kirby, fourth world, cosmic dots everywhere.
Yes.
What was the reaction? And I want to know this. I'm going to get this specific with you. How did you describe that in the script? Did you literally write, we're going to go full out fourth world? Like, when they went to the cosmic portal and, you know, we're flying after the witch, how did you describe that? I don't even know how you would describe that in your action beats.
You know what? That I've got to do a nod to Tony, because I knew I wanted to be Kirby-esque, and he wanted that as well. So I would write in things that had to happen and transitions and the ship and the guitar and all that stuff. But at some point, I feel you always need to let the people who do their job well do it well. And that's where we said to the animation team, this is what we want now, and these are the influences, What does that look like? You know, so I wouldn't say I had it written exactly what was there. I think I got them from point A to point B and so forth, but we just let them have a great time getting there, and we were so happy with what came back. So it is a collaborative effort on their part as well.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, are the words of a good collaborator.
See, this is why Kevin is a professional, and that's the reason why he works, is because he is just so complimentary to his entire team. That's a professional kid.
Well, it's true, too, though. I mean, I'm not just saying this to say it. I mean,
saying it. You made this movie in a vacuum.
Thank you. That's really what I was getting at.
Okay, so there's an interesting thing a story beat that I really like in this movie. And I think that's the reason why this movie so impressed me, is because I think it's just literally creatively firing at all cylinders. So we go through this Jack Kirby cosmic-y battle. And then the movie, when we think we know where this movie is going, you have the story take a turn, and you lead us down this road to where the Scooby Gang is able to explain everything that just happened as a hallucination.
Right.
And then we have this beat in this movie where us as the viewer, we're sitting there being like, well, who's right? Because we know what we saw.
Right.
But, you know, were we a little bit too much into Kiss during those scenes? Where did that come from? Because I love the idea how this movie balances all the cosmic-y stuff of Kiss, but that is very true to Scooby-Doo, where there is a logical explanation. You know, Old Man Withers is always the guy hiding behind the mask. Where did you come up with that story turn to, like, because that is very, I think, deferential to both worlds.
It is. And I think that was the thing with the Scooby notes, too, which was like, you know, Velma can't be wrong. You know, she questions everything and she needs to be able to explain this. And she does. And, you know, we want to be able to explain, as a Scooby-Doo fan, you know, everything is explained. You don't want to change it. But as a Kiss fan, too, and even, you know, Shaggy and Scooby, you know, they want it to be real. You know, they went on this journey. This part of them is like, I wish this could be real. And we wanted to. There was a little discussion in there. Like, I think Tony and I were like, this has to be real. There has to be a nod to, yes, everything you experienced really did happen. And I don't think it was an argument. I think it was the discussion. It was kind of like, well, this is what has to happen with Scooby. And we're like, that's fair, but we have to, you know, give in to our Kiss fans as well and say, no, maybe this really did happen. And by the end, it's not even a maybe. You know what I mean? As they fly off back into space, we're like, all right, well, I guess we're pretty much saying that's what it was. But as long as the Scooby-Doo gang know they solve their mystery the way they always solve their mysteries, and everybody gets to the end the way they normally get to the end, because we weren't trying to reinvent anything, we were happy.
No, I loved it, especially, to be honest with you, Kiss with energy superpowers to me just rocked. It was really good. Like, every time they like blasted somebody with energy or did the cosmic, magical, beautiful girl stuff, I just loved it.
I also love the idea of swallowing your fears, because that plays into like a really classic Scooby-Doo trope, that Scooby and Shaggy are kind of cowards who bumble their way through. But it allows you to imbue them with not only fun powers, which is great to see, but self-confidence, which is a nice, actually like a teaching moment and a lesson in the midst of all of the Kirby craziness.
No, that was the hope, you know. And, you know, I, like I said, I've done this long enough where I want that in a story as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to go on a journey for a reason and to accomplish something. What shocked me sometimes was how similar I found a lot of the characters. Like, when I had to pair them up at certain points, I was like, of course, Gene, of course the demon will be with Scooby and Shaggy, because it's everything they fear.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's also, he has a lot in common with them. I mean, you know, I have that moment where Scooby licks him and then Gene licks Scooby. I was like, they both got that long tongue. They both like to eat. You know, he's a demon. He's always devouring things. And when I found those pairings, I was like, this seems natural to me. So it was fun to, like I said, pair them up, because, you know, that had never happened before, obviously. They did do, Paul and Gene did do an episode of a Scooby-Doo. And actually, it might have just been Paul, because I think he was the only one who had lines, but they did do an episode of one of the Scooby-Doo series a while ago, maybe 10 years ago. I'm not sure how long ago.
Yes.
But this was the first time the full band was here and everybody got their own lines and everybody was very, you know, well developed and all that stuff. So it was fun.
Well, okay. Well, to wrap this up, let me ask you this. What, from your experience of writing this movie and working on this movie, is there a scene or a character or a line of dialogue that you look back on as, I can't believe they let me do that, or I can't believe they let me sneak this gag or this beat in?
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because there were, like I said to you, not knowing what was going to be allowed, there's a lot of it in there. All the shilling of the merchandise, I thought, are they going to be able to laugh at themselves the way I'm laughing at them? And that was shocking to me that they said, yeah, let's do it. You know, Scooby-Doo side, I wasn't sure if they were going to let me have Daphne fall for Starchild as much as she did.
I'm going to be honest. I was surprised that you got away with the kiss at the end. And it is a lengthy kiss, as Fred points out.
I know. So that, stuff like that, I thought, you know, I'm riding the line because obviously it's for kids. But if you're watching Kiss, you know, if you're a kid, they're new to you. In fact, the band, I think Tommy was the one who said they got more exposure doing this movie than they would have if they had put out a new album. You know, so it's true to that regard. And so I did want a little, not adult humor, but I wanted adults to be able to watch this. Like I said, I when I write things, I write them as a viewer as well. And I want to be entertained and I want to enjoy these things. You know, I've been fans of Kiss forever, so I don't want it to be thrown away on some, oh, look, we're at a kid show or whatever. And I don't want to ever talk down to kids either. They can handle it. We grew up, you know, or I grew up with that type of thing. So I thought, let's just put it in there and let's see what happens. So actually, you're right. When we got to that kiss, I thought, well, let's see if this goes anywhere. But I got to say, one of the things I'm not that I ever wouldn't go in there, but one of my favorite segments is when Freddie puts the black circle around his eye and everybody's like, hey, nice black eye. And he's like, it's a moon. Nice shiner. It's a moon. And Frank Welker, just a shout out. I mean, shout out to the whole cast. But Frank Welker has been doing Freddy
since
incarnation in 1969.
Yeah, since the original. Yeah,
The original guy. And now he does Scooby-Doo as well. And he just, and I knew him very well from Mad and from other shows that I had cast him in, but he nails that. And I shouldn't be surprised because he is Freddy, but this was somewhat new humor for the Scooby gang as well. You know what I mean? There were areas that I thought, I don't know if we've gone here before. And I just was tickled pink when they, with their line readings and, you know, Gray and Matthew Lillard and everybody, was just such a dream to work with.
Well, I'll tell you what was a dream, and that was enjoying the hell out of this movie and just enjoying this conversation
as
with you.
As two fully grown adults, we very much enjoyed this. 5 minutes in, I was like, this is great.
Yeah. Like, right in, we were like, whoa, okay. So again, everybody out there, if you have not watched Scooby-Doo and Kiss Rock and Roll Mystery, we're going to recommend this movie from 2015. It's a fun Halloween movie. It's set on Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not a Kiss fan, I would treat it as the idea of that there are all these old Scooby-Doo episodes.
Or if you're only a Kiss fan and not a Scooby fan. I think it serves both audiences.
It works both ways. Remember when Scooby-Doo would meet the Harlem Globetrotters? Like, they were weird?
Yeah.
Kiss is the same thing, man. It really works. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. We're not going to let you escape quickly away. But we want to ask you, are you working on anything now that our listeners can go watch, can check out, can buy, and where can they find you online?
Or if you're appearing somewhere.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I took a little, not even a break, because I'm working on so many things at once all the time, but certain things come to fruition at different times. And I actually have a Star Wars novel coming out in November.
Whoa, congrats.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very excited by it. It's called Star Wars Force Collector. And you can pre-order it now on Amazon, but it comes out November 19th, about a month before the episode 9 comes out.
Well, and as all our listeners know, pre-orders for books matter. So go there and pre-order Kevin's book right now, support his book, so he can write more Star Wars books, so he can get a trilogy of his own, except for Star Wars
books. You've already got a Wikipedia entry. You've made it.
No, that was a happy day. That was a happy day.
Real quick, I just want to thank all the listeners who went to Twitter. They marched on Twitter in full force and supported this idea.
I want to say more of them came in as we were doing this episode, so I apologize if we didn't shout out anyone's names. It was only the people who we got collected before we started.
Some scheduling stuff.
I think that was mostly me just retweeting and retweeting. It was at Kevin Shinnick. If you look at it, it'll say at Kevin Shinnick about 50 times. So.
Oh, but it's got all these different icons on it.
All right, very quickly, Ashley, we're going to move into the last section of our podcast, the Honor Roll. That is where our listeners can go to Apple Podcasts in the United States and leave us a 5-star review. It helps the podcast be found in search algorithms. You could write literally anything. You could tell us how much you love Kiss and Scooby-Doo meeting in this I wanted to say murder mystery. That's the sequel.
You're not wholly
wrong.
Velma is dead and Kiss shows up to investigate.
Not Velma. Anyone but Velma. Not with her precious glasses.
But if Kiss show up, they can resurrect her.
Okay, as long as they bring her back to life with the power of rock.
Yeah. There's the sequel.
But you can go to iTunes and you can leave us a 5-star review. It helps out the podcast. Ashley, who joins the Honor Roll this week?
Today we have 3 people joining the honor roll, including Mr. 540, who says, I am so incredibly grateful for this podcast. Being a huge comic nerd, this podcast has brought me nothing but joy. It is a very entertaining way to learn about different superheroes and even expand on my knowledge of the ones I thought I had already known. The playful banter and little skits they do are always so cheery and fun. Oh, thank you. Thank you both for all that you do and all the happiness that you bring your fans. Long live Tex Willerman. Oh, that was very sweet and then very silly. Mr. 540 is also joined by M. Asbury, who says, I found this podcast 2 years ago and can say that I love it. I'm a disabled vet and I'm trying to get back to my army weight. This podcast keeps me entertained and motivated to keep going every workout and down 40 pounds now. So thankful for all your hard work. M. Asbury, first of all, thank you for your service and for being so incredible. We're so grateful when people bring us on their personal journeys like that. And lastly, joining the honor roll this week is Kyle Roger Rice, who says, I am getting into comic books and there's no better place to start than Geek History Lesson. The history and recommended reading of each character make it so easy to get started. So Mr. 540, M. Asbury, and Kyle Roger Rice, welcome to the Teacher's Lounge. Jason, what's going on here today?
It's a music lessons by Mr. Freely.
Mr. Freely?
Yes.
Is he wearing his makeup today?
Look, if you ask nicely, he will.
Okay.
Usually just on Fridays, though, casually. He wears the
casual
makeup. Casual Fridays, he wears the makeup. Yes.
Oh, great.
Everybody out there, if you loved our conversation with Kevin, please go to patreon.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. That's where we do our extra podcast, Geek History Lesson Extra, where we'll be talking with Kevin and his career. Now we're in the final section of the podcast. Hashtag stick around. That's where we see if you stuck through all our plugs. Kevin, I have to ask you, as I'm going to probably say you're a bigger Kiss fan than me, because you know, your bona fides are writing a Kiss movie.
Right.
What are your thoughts on Kiss's 18th studio album, Psycho Circus? Now, I ask about the Psycho Circus because the Psycho Circus is my meet cute to Kiss.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, that's when the McFarlane Toys Company, Action Figure Spotlight, made action figures of Kiss. And before those action figures, I had no idea who Kiss was. And the action figures in Psycho Circus was my entryway into Kiss. So as an old school member of the Kiss Army, what are your thoughts on the Psycho Circus period of Kiss?
It's very much like you said. It was fun to see them take on a new life. You know, they tried it with the movie, and then they had their dolls, you know, and they had their early Marvel comics and stuff. But Psycho Circus kind of put them, like you said, in a McFarlane world, and that was a new thing. And, you know, going back to what Tommy said about how they got more exposure doing this movie than they did if they would have put a new album, I feel that's kind of also attributes to their longevity, which is they're not just about music. You know, they've always been about so many things, but they always seem to find new ways to introduce themselves to another generation. For you, it was Psycho Circus. For this new generation, maybe it's Scooby-Doo and Kiss. You know, they're keeping themselves relevant if they can. And the music is always the music, and I love it, and the classics are the classics, but it's fun to see them in different incarnations. So I'm all for it.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about it that way, that yeah, Kiss about every 10 years does something that gives everybody a new entryway into their world. And
mine was the reality show, was Gene Simmons' Family Jewels.
2000s?
Yeah.
Mid-2000s, I think?
I thought his son was cute.
Yeah. So there's another way. And when you think about it, their look is so iconic.
Even
if you don't know who Kiss is, I think if you see a picture of Kiss, you're like, oh, I know that band.
But I think the reason that they sustain, I mean, the music is great, obviously speaks for itself, but I think the mythologizing hits us in the same way that comic book. That's why nerds love Kiss, man.
By the way, fun fact, I just want to tell you both that the Kiss Psycho Circus comic book ran for 31 issues.
Wow. Lettered by Richard Starkings. Good job. Wow.
All right, everybody. This has been such a blast to record. I want to just say thanks again to our amazing guest, Kevin Shinnick.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for giving up part of your evening to talk about Kiss and Scooby-Doo.
Thank you for letting us bully you into coming on the show.
No, you see me? It's a labor of love, like I said.
Also, another thank you to Sterling Gates for hooking us all up.
That's correct.
what a weird small world this is.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much to everybody who listens to Geek History Lesson. I have been Jason the Spaceman Inman.
I have been Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Class is dismissed for rock!